outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bravada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Podcast number 700 for the God Journey. Oh my gosh. Yay!
That's like, yeah, God. You need an in-house audience to clap for that.
700. That's
a lot of talking.
And for me, such a quiet individual, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Good. No, I didn't. Brad and I started this so many years ago. Never thought
I'd go this. How many years ago? Well, it was before Amy was born, so 15 years.
15 years ago. Yeah, yeah, we started this thing, and we're just going to help people have some conversations, and then, you know, I'd stop this thing anytime I didn't think I was in interesting conversations with people. But I like the conversations. I especially love when Julie gets to join us in the house. Hi, Julie.
Hello.
Hey, we just done celebrating Mom's birthday.
I know. Good day.
We won't say how many, a couple, but. You took her out to lunch today and the kiddos.
Kids are off school, so yeah.
Kids off school because of Columbus Day.
Oh, yeah.
No, Rosh Hashanah. Something. Yeah. This is California. They take holidays for everything.
My kids don't mind. They're okay with that.
Yeah. So it was fun to see the kids since I'm back from, where were you again? All over the South. Man, Atlanta, South Carolina, Virginia,
some
Tennessee,
nice lake pictures I saw from somewhere.
Some what?
Lake pictures I saw from somewhere.
Lake Jocassee, yeah. Finishing Bob Stamps' book, which we talked about last week. So actually, this book I've been talking about forever, some of you are actually going to get to read it.
Yes.
Maybe in the next year or so. We have to figure out still what the publishing looks like. Haven't figured that out yet, but book's all done.
Awesome.
But this was a crazy trip for me. My goodness. First day Atlanta. We're out playing golf with some people. It was 96 degrees.
Oh, geez.
In Atlanta.
So humid?
Oh, yes.
Ooh, that's fun.
Oh, my goodness. The golfing was fun. The conversation was fun. But we came off the course pretty...
I bet.
Just dead. Next day, all day long, sitting and talking with people on different journeys. And we had missionary. We had a whole lot of missionary people that had spent years in Thailand or Honduras or Israel. And yeah, so we had some really fun conversations about Jesus and the journey and what church looks like and just people who are kind of getting to the end of religion, but not Jesus. That was fun. And the next day, I tell you what, it's probably the best day of the whole year, except for all the special moments Sarah and I share together.
Of course.
And I have with you and the grandchildren, of course.
Of course.
Man, I stayed in the home with a guy who's a Delta Airlines pilot, and he wanted to fly me to my next stop, which not only saved us a three-hour drive, but got me up to fly in a small plane. Yeah, we didn't go Delta. We went on the little Beechcraft, the twin.
Even better.
I've never got to fly a twin. I've never flown through clouds. He's instrument rated. I'm not. Got my license at 17. So for the first time in a long time, I got to fly a little plane.
That's awesome.
Oh, gosh. It made me think of the last time I flew with you in the plane.
Yeah.
You remember that?
I do. Visalia.
How old were you?
Yeah, I was young, right? High school.
I was thinking like 8 or 9, 10 maybe.
No.
Or you think high school?
I think middle school or high school.
Yeah, we had a guy visit the church I was pastoring at the time, and he had a small plane. And he flew it down from San Francisco, was flying it back, and I got invited to come out and fly with him, so we flew.
I tagged along.
We flew over the foothills.
Visalia.
And then coming back, he said, "I'll take the plane over now." And there was a look in your eye like, "What? My dad's been flying." Do you remember that?
Like, no, I was not warned about that.
No, Dad was flying the plane. And that guy and this Delta guy, who's a senior Delta pilot, and one of the things he does is check out people, make sure they're flying well and doing all the right stuff. He gave me the plane for a while, which we were on a course to get to this airport. He's dropping me off near Clemson. And, man, I'm flying it, and we're going through the clouds to come back down into the approach path. And as he took over the plane again, as we got near the ground, because I'm not.
You're not going to do that part.
I'm not going to land this thing. don't even want to try, actually.
Yeah, right.
And as we're coming in, man, he turned to me and he said, "You are a natural."
Oh.
Which is exactly what the guy said to me in Visalia years ago when I was flying back in. He just said, "Man, I watch you scan the controls, scan the instruments, look outside, go through clouds. You stayed on descent, stayed just everything you needed to do. And you were talking the whole time with us in the plane, and because we had some other folks in there too." And he said, "You're really a natural at this." Which
nice.
Is, yeah, for someone that flies, you know, twice in 40 years.
Yeah, right. Should have been a pilot.
One of my great regrets in life, it really is, that I didn't want to be a pilot vocationally. I actually wanted to be an air traffic controller.
Yes, I do remember that.
God hadn't intruded into my life to do other things. But I don't have regrets about decisions I've made, but it's sad for me that it didn't include more of that flying thing. It just feels so good. I love piloting a plane. I love getting it where I go. But we almost saw a crash before we left.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that's what you don't want to do.
That's what you don't want to see either.
To go up on a little plane. And we got out to the airport we were flying out of south of Atlanta. And we're just getting the plane out of the hangar and prepping it to get ready to go. And then we hear this chirp, chirp as this plane touches down. And then it powers up again. So it's doing a little touch and go. But as it got past the hangar, we couldn't see it land. But it was getting past the hangar that was blocking our view. That thing was vertical to the ground. Wingtip about 10 feet off the ground.
Oh, man.
And there were three of us there that were pilots, and we just looked at it, and all of us had the same thought. Guy's going in. Okay, we're going to see that thing just cartwheel down the runway. Somehow he got control of it again.
Wow.
Straightened it out. I probably needed a change of pants and some other things.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Oh, my gosh. And it was an old Corsair, World War II aircraft, high-powered, and I think he may have rammed the throttle too quick, too fast to the board. And the torque on an engine like that is just incredible. And it almost threw him into
gosh.
The ground. And he didn't come back for a while, but eventually he came back and landed. Oh, man. Yeah, and then I get up to work on this book, and we water ski the next day. And 2 days later, 3 days later, we're jet skiing across the lake. And
so this was a really rough trip for you.
I have never been on a trip with so much of that
golf,
fun
flying,
stuff thrown in.
Jet skis, skiing.
Water skiing.
Like that, that's all of it. Writing, like that.
Well, the writing.
You like writing? Maybe not the editing part, but.
No, I do like writing. Actually, editing is my favorite part of the writing. When you're reshaping the story and trying to get it right, I love that part.
Oh, well, see, there you go.
Yeah, and I'm excited. We start with like 130,000 words or something. Somebody say 140. I think it was that much, but 130, and we needed to get it closer to 45, and end up getting it to 46 something.
Wow.
And just made the story streamline more, and it's just so good. This is Bob's story. People say, oh, you wrote it. It's Bob's story, Bob's characters, Bob's descriptions, but he's asked me to help shape the story with them, and that has
so
been
cool.
Fun. This is a story I'm reading to Sarah right now, so we're kind of looking for other things in it, and I can't wait for people to read it. I had Arnita read it, who, as some of you heard her on the podcast, she's part of the other book I've done, Language of Healing. She told me this is one of the most important books she's ever read, and she's not a fiction reader. She going to bed at 10 o'clock at night, thought, I'll pick up a couple chapters. Because I've wanted to read it, particularly how we interact with Monroe's story,
yes.
the black youth in the story, and want to make sure that we're not on any landmines we shouldn't be on.
Yeah.
And so I asked Arnita, and she'd already read the first two sections, so now she's reading section three. She was going to read a couple chapters before she went to bed, and I was getting texts. Which my time was like midnight her time. I was getting texts from her going, oh man, love this, and then oh my goodness, I can't believe what just happened here. And
wow.
I've been crying and tears. And she ended up reading till 2 o'clock in the morning her time.
Couldn't put it down.
Yeah, she finished it. So I'm hoping other people think it's that. I do. I think it's that worth it. I think the story is so compelling, interesting plot twist at the end. So yeah, all fun.
Awesome. Very cool.
So we got our work done as well as doing what little playing. I mean, we're working on it probably 9-10 hours a day. We're working pretty hard, and then
need some break time.
Yeah. And then went up to North Carolina, Western Virginia, a little town called Damascus, 814 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's small.
7 trails in the Blue Ridge converge on this little town, so it's kind of known as the crossroads.
Okay.
So we set out on this deck for the weekend to just talk to people. Sometimes hikers coming by would see people gathered, and other times we just met people who were in the town and heard somebody connected to the shack was there. And so they wanted to come over and meet me. So we got to do that. And
that's very cool.
Yeah, it was all pretty cool. And I was talking to one lady who wanted to come over and wanted me to sign a book for her. She had there's a lot of people had the old In My Father's Vineyard art book.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And can you even buy that anymore?
I signed about 5. I've got 10 of them on my shelf right over there. But no, you can't. Used on Amazon for like $373.
Oh, geez.
I don't think people get that, but I should sell these on Amazon, come to think of it. But yeah, I signed her book. She's a producer in Hollywood, and we talked about some of her projects. And As she walked away, somebody said, "You know who that is, don't you?" And I'm going, "No." She said, "That was a James Bond girl. She was in the original James Bond stuff." Yeah, 50 years ago. Going,
you didn't recognize her?
Really? Oh, my gosh. So I met a James Bond girl.
There you go.
Of course, this was 40 years later, maybe. Yeah. So I didn't think she was a James Bond girl. So anyway, but it's part of my time in Damascus. And I just this couple's just moved there because they feel like God's led them to. They have no idea what God has in mind for them. But in the midst of talking to some of their friends who had driven from some ways away where they used to live, my hosts, and one of the guys I was talking to there gave me a line. He just was talking and we were talking about relationships. And he said, life moves at the speed of relationships. And I said, whoa, back that truck up a little bit. What an
Never
expression.
Heard that.
Life moves at the speed of relationships. And I asked him, where do you get that? He said, I think some missionary from Philippines was talking that way or something. And I'm going, man, never heard that statement. I loved it the first time I heard it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was sharing it with my hosts as they were driving me back to Charlotte, North Carolina to catch my flight back home. I mentioned to him, I said, oh man, your friend mentioned this phrase. And the wife turned to me and said, that's my husband. I said, what?
Oh.
Not a Philippine missionary? No, my husband came up with that. And he did when he was part of a kind of a retreat center for kind of burned out pastors and whatever. And he said they would always notice when people would come there, they'd come there with all their projects and all their stuff. And they're going to not just retreat and heal, they're going to keep working on stuff. And that was an expression that came up with life moves at the speed of relationships. Slow down is kind of what was behind that.
Hmm.
So I thought it'd be fun for you and I. We're going to not do our chapter or whatever. Seven,
Straight
three,
from our norm.
Two, whatever. Yeah, we're going to skip that. Because I thought, man, the only way I'd love to talk about this with you, you actually live this. Your life travels at the speed of relationship. Even though you've got children, you've got a husband, you've got lots of things you need to run around and do. But what I love about your life, one of the things I love about it is what the premium you put on relationships in your life.
I don't know where I learned it. Goodness. I think it's just, I don't know, a gift from God maybe that I appreciate people in my life for whatever season they're in my life, for whatever moment I get with them. And I love loving on people.
Yeah. So, and you find relationship, it's not just relationship with others. You really take time to have relationship with each of your children. And not just you're in the same room with them, not just whatever, but you're investing time in conversations with them, in discovering who they are and what they like and what they're going through and what they're struggling with. You have great relationships with all three of your kids and your hubby and your dad, which I enjoy. Oh, and by the way, I was going to tell you this. I had three people on this trip in three different places tell me, I love when you and Julie get on the podcast.
Oh, goodness.
I said, really? I said, oh, my gosh. Yes, you guys are just, it's so fun watching you two interact with each other, knowing that.
Giving each other a bad time.
You know me as well as anybody in the world, probably except Sarah.
Probably.
And people say, when's Sarah going to be on the podcast? And
she's a little harder to get in here.
Be clear.
Although we had Lindsay halfway through the door. I don't know what happened.
We Lindsay in here today. That
would have gone a whole different direction.
No telling where that would have gone, but it would have been fun. And we could have thrown the recording away. If there wasn't fruitful to it. But yeah, Sarah has a standing invitation to come here. And occasionally I nudge her this direction and she is resolute and nope. No, thank you. You, on the other hand, you don't mind getting in there.
I don't mind.
Because you care about relationships with your dad, maybe.
Yeah.
But the relationship thing, I think what captured me about that, being a writer, doing the writing I do, one of the things about writing is it's never urgent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why a lot of people talk about writing a book or talk about doing whatever. But if you live in the tyranny of the urgent, which is, all this stuff's coming after me. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. Everything else in life is urgent.
Yeah.
Writing is not.
Right.
And relationships are not.
Right.
You can get through life pretty much ignoring just the necessities of survival, getting work done, chores done, responsibilities done. If you're driven by that, you can end up years down the road and look around and say, I don't really have any friends.
Yeah. Well, life is busy for everybody. You know, it used to be one of my pet peeves, and I could get flack for this, but I hate it when people say, oh, I'm just so busy. And we all say it. I do say it. But everybody's busy, but it's what do you take time for? You're going to take time to do things that are important to you. And for me, like, it's people in my life are important. And so I will make time for them. If a friend needs me for something, I think most of my good friends know I would drop whatever I was doing and I would be there. And I think that it's being intentional. And I try to do that with my kids. It's being very intentional when they're in the room, putting my phone down, or let's talk. And it's same thing when I'm with any person. It doesn't even have to be a good friend, but I hope that there's this intentionality of being in the moment and being present and putting all the busyness and all the other stuff aside long enough to focus on that person. And that's how you connect and draw closer.
It is. And when we talk about life moves at the speed of relationship, and I would say at the same breath, no, it doesn't. Life moves at the speed of everything
yes,
else coming
around,
at you.
Yeah,
but
right.
True life, mm-hmm. real life moves mm-hmm. at the speed of relationships, because over time, what people value most, you know, people value when they're dying or at risk of whatever.
Right.
What they regret most often is the lack of relationship they've had with their spouse, their kids,
yeah.
their friends. Or I get the email a lot, you know, people 50, 60, 70 years old, I'm all alone. I don't have any friends in my life. And I don't know that I hear anything sadder
yeah.
than how you can be in your 50s, 60s and never have made the time for relationships. What I'm saying is everybody's deal. It's not always mm-hmm. that made the time. I think there's also a thing in here about not feeling like I'm worth knowing.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah. I don't invest in relationships. I don't think anybody cares about me or anybody wants to care about me.
Yeah.
And that's hard, because however you end up at the end of your journey without the significant relationships, I like saying relationships make us rich. For all that Sarah and I have, the things we treasure the most are the friends that we have and the relationships around the world and people we can sit down and have a conversation with and be enriched by the things they're discovering and knowing and the things we are. Relationships really are the thing. So to go back and say true life moves at the pace of relationships.
Yeah.
And if you can't get on that pace, if you're going to be driven by tyranny, if you're going to be driven by urgency, if you're going to be driven by responsibility or achievement or any of those other
yeah.
things, you're going to end up missing out on the most important thing God created us for, which is to have relationships with other people.
Yeah. And fellowship with other people. And those are some of my favorite times of the day is times. And sometimes, yeah, there is a friend that may need me and I have five other things going on, but that stuff can wait. Like I have a friend that needs to talk or whatever, even if it's not that they need something, if there's somebody that wants to connect or get together, I'm going to find room in my schedule and move some things around because those are important to me. And I love that kind of time with people and connecting with people that way.
Yeah, me too. And like I said, it is the most important thing in life. And I think if we even go back to the Gospels and look at Jesus, the things that always have enamored me about the New Testament is not the times he's with crowds doing crowd stuff.
Yeah.
And some of that isn't always that effective mm-hmm. because the crowd vanishes the next day. They're there for one agenda. But the most fruitful times in Jesus' life seems to be when he's with the disciples or Mary and Martha or a
yeah.
woman at a well, or he goes into Jericho where there's thousands of people seemingly lining the street wanting to talk to him. He's just healed Bartimaeus out the gate. So he's got a healing thing going on. He's got all these people. They're all excited to see him. And rather than go somewhere and preach a sermon or go
yeah.
somewhere and hold a healing rally or any of that stuff, he went to lunch with Zacchaeus,
yeah.
which is just nuts.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that we think of achievement, if you're going to pass the gospel on, why are you spending time with these 12 critters or the town's worst crook?
Right.
And yet Jesus somehow knew what will happen between me and Zacchaeus will have more impact on this community because they're all going to get money back. So, but it's mm-hmm. not just the money, it's the transformed life that will be more valuable for Jericho than any sermon I could preach or healing else I could do. And I think that's, if you can slow your life enough to live at the pace of relationships and make them the priority that you have in your life, then I just want to say that's where life has meaning.
Right.
We think it's an achievement, but our overachievers never come out fulfilled.
Yeah.
You may be able to put a notch on your vanity wall or something else, but the real joy of living is knowing you've treated people well and you have relationships that are wholesome and healthy and Awesome.
Well, I think we live in a world too of social media where you're almost tricked into feeling like you have all these great relationships on Facebook and Instagram or whatever. But I have taken a huge step back from social media recently to focus more on those people that are just in front of me that I can just connect with, heart connections. And you don't get that off of a computer or a phone, you know, off of, and yeah, those things are great, but I see a lot of people say, oh yeah, on Facebook, I hear about this, that, or the other, but, and that, you know, I keep up with all my friends here, but you don't really get to connect with people.
You don't, but your dad misses the grandkid pictures when he's traveling and there's no social media for him today.
I know, I'm sorry.
It's okay. You're choosing the better portion, but I love the grandkid pics that sail by. But I did see Amy and the play. You posted some stuff.
Yeah, I did do
her
that. Yes.
Thing in the play, and I'm
yes.
like, oh, "That's my kid."
Yes.
And yeah, and then I show people, "Look, that's my kid."
I know.
Yeah. And she did a bang up job. That kid's gotten to be quite the old dramatist.
Yeah. That was such a good one. Yeah,
it is. So I've had people tell me. In fact, I've shared this story before. Sarah told me at one time when I was pastoring. She didn't feel like she had any friends in the congregation that I was pastoring. And it was a very painful kind of discovery for her that no one really cared about her as a person. Mm-hmm. And gosh, it broke my heart because I felt like I had a lot. I felt like she did too. But for whatever reason, she didn't feel like people really cared about her for her. And one of the things we got to exploring was that I don't think people knew the real Sarah. Because Sarah is really good at having the kids all in mm-hmm. shape and dressed well and the house clean and the garden.
Especially gardens. That Sarah.
That Sarah, the old yeah, Sarah. The garden yeah. filled with flowers. She had all that stuff. But there was a loneliness in her heart that she didn't feel like she had access to anybody getting in that space.
Yeah.
And I told her at the time, I said, you know what? I think if you shared this, what you just shared with me, with three or four women in this congregation, I think you'd have friendships. I think that reality touches people. I think people think Sarah's got it all together. Sarah doesn't need me. Why would I be a friend to Sarah? But vulnerability.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is a Brené Brown thing.
It is.
But yeah, vulnerability is an important part of building relationships.
Absolutely.
If you're putting out an imposter you, then you have no real relationships. If you're putting out the real you, your doubts, your fears, your struggles, your broken places, mm-hmm. as well as your joys and strengths and dreams and hopes. It's not just one-sided, but the vulnerability. And sometimes sharing our dreams is vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because we're afraid other people might think our dreams are goofy or what we desire is horrible stuff.
Absolutely.
Vulnerability is a real key to that. What are some other keys that you find? Because I remember when you moved to this area after you guys got married, particularly after you had kids, one of the things you said to me one day was, I don't know where I'm going to have friendships for me and my kids. You know, you mm-hmm. guys went to church, you raised Sunday school, blah, blah, blah. And that's where a lot of our friends came from. So now you have more friends than you know what to do with. I would think just looking at your life and you talk about people you haven't seen in a while. You wish you could see.
Yeah.
So you do have a pretty full life, right?
Yeah.
How did you move from that, feeling like we didn't have those connections? And Amy was like one at the time.
Oh, yeah.
She's 14
was
now.
Yeah.
So what have you done to help explore relationships that have become meaningful to you?
Well, one, I think I'm the first to invite people. I'm the one that will initiate the invitation. And yeah, I get told no, you know, I can't, I'm busy or whatever, but I guess I'm a little persistent. If I see somebody that I want to be friends with, I'll keep inviting. So I think sometimes it takes somebody to initiate, to start. And when I moved to Simi Valley, people already had friends and knew people and I didn't. And so I joined a group of moms, a moms club group. But outside of that, it was me saying, hey, you want to hang out? Do you want to get together? Can you bring your daughter over? Let's hang, you know, and there was a lot of that. And I think even today, Tyler and I are both, we're social people and we enjoy inviting friends to come over and have dinner or meet, let's go out to dinner or let's hang out. And we don't get invited out a lot. Like we do a lot of the inviting. And I think I've heard you say the same thing, that's one way that I think I started is just being the one to make the effort to get a relationship going. And then from there, I'm just very intentional about, I think like vulnerability and intentionality, I think I said this earlier, but just being really intentional about connecting with people regularly.
Are you okay with the fact that you do more inviting than you get invited?
Yeah, I am now. I think for a long time I waited. to be invited.
I get that email a lot. People write and say, you know, we invite people over and no one ever invites us back. And so
yeah,
the conclusion people,
they don't like me.
Yeah. I don't like me. I'm not worth their time.
Yeah.
I think I get when I have people around my life who I feel like don't invite me because I'm not worth their time. Mm-hmm. And there are some that
absolutely.
Just, yeah. But there are other people that just, you know, they're not inviters for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. To think about, oh, we have Friday night free. Let's invite Wayne and Sarah out. I think, and particularly because I'm busy and some of them came to know me because I was an author.
Yeah.
I think that has some impact on it. But I never worry about how much we get invited back.
I don't either. And I think I used to more. And I think I've heard you say this before too. And so I think in my mind, I'm like, well, it doesn't matter. I'm just going to be the one to invite. And if they can't, they can't. But there's been nights where we'll invite a few different families and hope somebody will want to come hang out with us. And normally somebody does. Eventually we'll find someone. But there's been times where most of the time it happens if somebody can't, they're like, oh, can we do it next weekend? Like we really want. So I don't take that as, oh, they just don't want to hang out with us. I really genuinely know that, you know, they do, but you have to just keep trying.
Which is a certain level of internal security in your own life to realize, hey, people are turning us down for legitimate reasons. They're right. not making
they're
up
not,
reasons.
Yes.
Again, you can tell if you're with people, you can tell if they're enjoying the evening.
Yes, absolutely.
And I don't think everyone has the wherewithal to kind of come up with a night and a time or invite into their home because that means cleaning it after working all week. And, you know, there's a lot of people that just don't go there for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And that's always been true in our friendships, mm-hmm. Sarah and I. But we've just had that, you know, as long as we get the sense that they really enjoy it, then we're not worried about whether they think to invite us out or they think to, you know, have a dinner at their home and invite us over there. We just don't worry about it. And the relationships are no less rich because of mm-hmm. where we're getting together or at whose invitation.
But right.
I think part of what it is to love people and to engage people is that you're willing to take the initiative and mm-hmm. you're not counting on. And in fact, Jesus even said as much. He said, if you invite somebody over that invites you over, then what's that mean? You know, invite people that can't invite you back or can't do and enjoy relationships for what they are. And people who have that kind of initiative and aren't always second guessing if they're well liked or not. And yeah, I think that's helpful.
And without expectations. I think that's one of the biggest things that I noticed from the relationships that I have in my life. I don't have expectations on them. I need to see you this amount of times a week. I need to feel like you love me. Like I genuinely enjoy every moment that I get with the people that are around me. But I don't have the expectation that they're going to whatever it is. I feel like there's a lot of times people put those kinds of things on relationships and then you let people down and then they're upset and then that's where everything goes weird. And so
takes something that's said and misinterprets it, gets hurt by it and like carries it for 6-8 months.
Right. You have no idea.
Before you even hear about it. Yes. You're going, you know what? That's not even what really happened.
Yeah.
And that's not even what I really said.
But right.
And then this is the worst part. They argue with you. Oh yes, it was. Okay, well, if you know my own mind better than I know my mind, not only are expectations getting in the way, but now your arrogance is getting in the way.
Yeah.
And I think the lovely thing about the relationships that Sarah and I share with other folks is that we don't spend a lot of time with people that are tripped up by those things.
Yes.
They're hurt all the time. And it's like if you don't jump to them at the exact moment something going on, then they get hurt or you didn't show up to a thing they thought you should have shown up to prove your friendship. Those friendships don't go very far. And if you're one of those people that adds to that, you're always looking to be hurt. And then you're always wanting to punish people you feel like are hurting you and they're not.
Yeah.
You're going to end up alone without friendships. You just are, because it's uncomfortable. Nobody wants to be part of a relationship where your expectations.
Yeah.
If you haven't invited me over in a certain time frame, well, then you don't think you don't care about me.
Well, and it's what it does to the other person. I was in a friendship like this for a while and it was exhausting. I feel like I was constantly letting her down. I could never do anything right.
Yep.
And as much as I tried just to love her however I could, it never was enough. And so the person doesn't want to be in a relationship. That's just hard. That's really hard.
Yeah. And unless God's really put it on your heart to love into that space to help this broken life get better, then great.
Right.
But if God hasn't given you that impetus, it's downright abusive to have people keep putting pressure on the relationship right. by expectations that are ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You didn't call me when I went through that. Why didn't you care? Didn't you know? And you're going, oh my gosh. In fact, I gave you a text and I tried to say, hey, if you need anything, let me know. I'd love to be with you.
Yeah.
But that wasn't good enough. And if you would have called, it wouldn't. Why didn't you come by and visit? And if you come by and visit, why didn't you bring flowers? And it's just that kind of personality that always wants to feel rejected. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how much you do. They're going to end up feeling rejected and that you are intentionally trying to hurt them.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy.
Yeah.
But it is. So relationships kind of a two-way street. And yep. I don't mean let's compare how many times who's inviting who.
Oh, it's just, no.
Are we enjoying it? Is it fruitful? Is it? Because what I love about friendships is, like you said, without expectations, but they're just free-flowing. You actually enjoy being with these people. It's not, oh, you know, we just need to do this for Jesus. But really, the people we spend time with, we completely enjoy. And we can relax and be ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think they get to relax and be themselves as well.
Right.
And which doesn't mean they always do what you want them to do, but that's not what makes a friendship.
Not. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's so much easier just to go through life without those expectations and to just like, that's what I feel like, you know, you say very nice things about my relationships I have with other people, but I don't feel like this is something that is important to me that I strive to do. I look for the opportunities that I feel like God puts in front of me of who I can love today. And I have this little time in my car actually that I have every day when I'm waiting for kids pick up.
Playing shuttle bus driver.
Yeah. I have a few quiet moments before it gets really crazy in my day. And I've been very intentional. What's that word again? It keeps popping up today. But
yeah, you say you don't strive, which is great, but the intentionality is what's positive.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I will sit there and just like maybe take like 5 or 10 minutes and maybe it's like a couple of minutes for all I know, but just to kind of listen, like, is there somebody that God's putting on my heart? You know, is there a friend that maybe I haven't heard from today that I could just drop them a text and say, hey, I'm thinking about you. And I can tell you, like, just me doing that the past, I don't know, month maybe that my kids have been in school, that I've really had this time that I've kind of set apart to do that. I've had relationships really grow and change. And it's like, it's a text. It's a, hey, I'm just thinking about you today. I hope you're doing well. Or, you know, I just was sitting here and I was thinking about this. How is that? Or whatever. It's so simple. It takes me like 30 seconds to send a text, maybe a couple minutes of thinking. But I feel like so much has come out of that.
Yeah. Or even a phone call. You know how many phone calls I get a year of people that just call me to say, hey, just thinking about you. Are you doing okay? How you doing?
Yeah.
I get maybe one a year. I may get 4 or 5 texts a year like that.
Yeah.
But you're right. Those are very meaningful. When I get them, when somebody just said, hey, I'm like, what can I do for you? They go, oh, I don't need anything.
Yeah.
I just want to call, see if you're okay. Anything I can be praying for you about? And I'm just going, that is so cool.
Yeah.
That is really cool and really enhances the growth of a friendship. What else do you think enhances that? I'm thinking while we're talking to Bob Prater, he talks about getting with complete strangers. He'd just be in a, like going through a checkout lane in the supermarket and just get talking to the cash register check guy. And young kid looks like he's, you know, conflicted in some way, whatever. Mm-hmm. And he'll just say, hey, how about you and I go to breakfast sometime? And the kid goes, what do you mean? I don't even know you. He said, well, that wouldn't be true after we had breakfast. And he kind of plays with it because he doesn't want to be like a stalker weird dude. But he feels like his calling is to just get with people that he perceives could use a friend. And then his first thing when he sits down, and I love this, he just says, tell me a story. Hmm. Just tell me a story. And people love to tell their story.
Oh, yeah.
He had one story that went for 3 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Where he didn't say a word.
He wasn't anticipating that conversation, I'm sure.
This guy is fairly well known. He's a leader in his community and all that stuff. And when he got done, Bob hadn't said a word. And he said, you know what? This is the most incredible lunch I've ever had. Yeah, you did all the talking. But he got to know him, and that opened up other doors for conversation. Yeah. I think getting into someone's story, and I don't mean that like the little testimony time I used to have in church growing up. You missed a lot of that, but you know, where everybody's telling the same Jesus story all the time. I don't mean that so much as you get into someone's story. And it doesn't have to be one whole 3 hour stint, but as the relationship grows, mm-hmm. I get to know what makes you tick. Mm-hmm. I get to know kind of your history and what's impacted who you are and what you're passionate about in the world. Getting into their story and then them getting into my story, which is easier to do. I show up everywhere now. When I get to Atlanta. Everybody knows every good story I have because they've listened to too many podcasts. The 700 of them and they've listened
the
to
the downside. Of them.
So you start a story, they go, oh, yeah, I know,
I can finish it for you.
Yeah. But when you get into someone else's story and they get into yours and you really know it, that's where friendship
right,
is vital.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in religious settings, I know, so when we grew up, we talked about that when you guys were kids. We'd go out with a couple for an evening, whatever. We'd talk about weather. We'd talk about kids. We'd talk about sports. We'd never talk about someone's journey. Mm-hmm. We never got into that deeper story. And I remember coming home from those going, you realize we're together for 3 hours with that couple. Jesus never came up once, which is not like he has to come up.
Right.
But it's just, I don't know anymore about their spiritual journey. And when I tried to ask, because I was a pastor, so I did, I'd say, what's Jesus showing you these days? And I remember people.
You were the pastor going, asking that.
You just see this look of absolute terror. Yes. And they're, I was reading the other day. And I just go,
reading my Bible and praying.
So I learned not to ask that question because it just put a lot of pressure on people. I've also learned recently, we said this on a podcast or two a while back, but I think it's profound. When you ask a guy how he's doing spiritually, what he hears is, how am I doing sexually? In terms of temptation and lust, pornography. I mean, that's just the way guys think. So if I'm struggling at all, I've defined my whole spiritual journey by how much freedom I have sexually, which is such a huge mistake.
Right.
Yeah. Just not where you want to go with guys. Mm-hmm. Not that you would ever go there with guys, but in terms of helping people understand, you want to get people off of that whole, it's not about sin and sin management, and peel back from that. And just, what makes you tick? What are you hungry for? Where do you feel lost? Where? And if we can own that, then relationships grow.
Yeah.
And then you genuinely care about the other person. You don't have to pretend to care. You don't have to kind of, well, you know, it's been a month. I haven't called that person. I should call them now. That's not how relationships thrive.
No.
I like what you said. Relationships thrive just because you enjoy it. You enjoy them. You miss them for a time. So you give them a call. And
I have a couple of really close friends now that we joke about this because I was the one that was relentless and that kept, and one of my really good friends has even said, I can't tell you, I kind of brushed you off so many times, but every time I heard from you, she's like, I don't know if you understand what it gave me, just hearing that somebody cared about me, because she was going through a really rough spot in her life. And I didn't know that. Nobody knew that. But I just kind of kept feeling like I kept thinking about her, and I really wanted to hang out with her because I thought she was really fun. But I didn't know that on the other side of this, she was really going through some depression. And that, just my text, just, and it wasn't even checking in. It was like, hey, I'm just thinking about you. Let's hang out. Let's get together. When are you free? And even though half the time she would tell me no, she's like, I think I was intentionally trying to push you away, but it's like you wouldn't go. And she's like, and she has said, I think that was God knew that I needed somebody and he used you in that way. I had no idea. I just kept texting her. I just kept kind of popping in. And
you didn't sense the brush off at all?
I kind of felt like she was kind of brushing me, like that she was busy. It was always that she was busy, not that she didn't want to.
Right.
But I just, I kept thinking about her. And I'm like, I'm just going to text her again. That was probably God putting her on my heart but you never know.
And I love that you just didn't get hurt and stop.
Yeah.
That you just kept following these nudges on your heart to keep opening the door to her. Because I think people who are hurting, who are broken, one of the things that hurting does to us is it pushes us into isolation.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite stories is a guy, and I forget who told the story, but he was talking about this friend of his that was so depressed, he wouldn't even leave his house anymore. Closed the curtains, closed the door, never went out, just went over there, knocked on the door till the guy answered, crawled in, walked into his house, crawled up on the couch, sat on the back of the couch and just says, man, what can I do to help you?
Yeah.
And that opened a door, which is a little intrusive. But in a loving sort of way, because sometimes, you know, we talk about relationships we enjoy, and that's true for healthy people. Mm-hmm. It's also true that there's unhealthy people that want an escape, that need a lifeline, and you can be it. If you're willing to go past the, I'm getting the brush off, but that's okay, because there's something here that maybe God has given me
there's a
place.
A reason why I keep thinking about her and why I'm just going to keep texting her, because you never know.
It could really be that simple. You know, if somebody's on your heart and mind, give them a call.
Yeah.
Text them.
Anything.
Go for a visit. Do whatever. But we seem to have this, you know, maybe it's just the selfish orientation towards survival in my day that I'm not thinking about other people. When I do, I just brush it off too quickly. Mm-hmm. Instead of, I mean, I do. If I have somebody on my heart, I'm going to hit them with a text, an email, usually an email because I hate texting, but I'm going to hit them with an email or a phone call just because I will.
Yeah.
And you never, and if it's not, if they don't particularly need it, it's never a bad thing.
Oh, yeah.
No one's ever
hurt.
Why'd
he text me?
Yeah, stupid idiot called me and I didn't want to talk to him.
Yeah.
And if they can say that to me, then they will never get another call. I can do that too.
Yeah, there you go.
It's not a problem. But I love that. Life travels at the speed of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that's real life. And I think we could say, looking at Jesus' life, the kingdom grows at the pace of relationships. And I got an email last week from someone that's just been their whole life bent on, you've got to do something great for God. And great for God is always write a best-selling book, have a big institution, have a flashy ministry. And it's the frustration of trying to do that, never feeling like they've been successful at it. But just that's been the driving force of their life. I know for the first 40 years of my life, trying to do something great for God motivated me.
Yeah.
I was trying to do that. And when love began to unravel all that brokenness in my heart, now I just enjoy the things I get to do with him,
yeah,
which is very different. And so I really think now the kingdom grows. If you could summarize Jesus' ministry, it would say the kingdom grows at the pace of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't start a program, didn't write a book, didn't mm-hmm. teach us how to do church, didn't do all the institutional stuff. What he did was simply love 12 guys, some yeah. women around that, some other guys. And then he told them to go love like they were loved.
Yep.
And the kingdom would enter the world in its fullness if we loved that way. If we just lived life at the pace of relationships, found people to love and pour love into them, not try to find people to love me and try to suck it off. That's, I think, where a lot of lonely people dwell. Mm-hmm. That's not so fruitful. And people say, I've tried that. Doesn't work. But if you just look for people to love, there's someone lonelier than you in your life, I promise you.
Oh, yeah.
And if you can find them and find a way into their heart and let them share who they really are and love them in the midst of it, you'll help change the world.
Yeah, there was something you said, I think, in your Jesus Lens series from forever ago. But you,
my daughter watches my stuff.
That was a long time ago.
I'm not that old.
You had said, you know, start in the Gospels and just on reading about Jesus' life and how he lived and walked this planet. And I took that and I immersed myself in the Gospels for like a while. And this was around the time probably that we'd moved to Simi Valley and had Amy. I think it was around then that you did the Jesus Lens. It was a long time ago.
Not that long. No. This was like 2008 or 9, I think.
Well, anyways, but it was around this time. And I remember doing this for a while and really coming away with, because only reading that and just over the stories of Jesus over and over and watching just how he loved, and like, wow, this is something about doing that for whatever time period it was in my life. I don't know what it was, but it just stuck with me about just loving other people. It doesn't matter. A lot of my friends are not Christians. We've talked about it before on the podcast. It doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter. I don't need to have just Christian friends. I just need to love whoever God puts in front of me.
And there's not a better way to celebrate the 700th podcast than talking about this, because this strikes to the heart of our relationship with him and getting that centered and then finding the freedom to love others in the world, because that really is how the gospel perpetuates itself. And it's how we experience true life, which is friends that matter and people who care. So thanks.
Oh, you're welcome.
Come back someday.
Yeah.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.